Presses Play.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Girl Presses Play, the movie podcast where we talk about films, what we think about them, and what makes them so damn great. I'm your host, Alana Rafferty. Get comfy, grab some popcorn, and get ready, because we're about to press play.
And now for our feature presentation.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Girl Presses Play. I hope you all are preparing for sweater weather and Halloween season, which for me has started a week ago with my workout playlist, mostly consisting of the Halloween theme song and Rocky Horror, but that's another discussion for another time. Just a few quick housekeeping notes before we get started. Just wanted to remind everyone that we are still running our Patreon donation drive since we're doing an episode about Black Panther later this month. Girl Presses Play wanted to honor the late Chadwick Boseman by donating all of our Patreon proceeds for October to St. Jude Children's Hospital and Howard University. Click the link in the description below to join Patreon and make your donation today. Also, just a quick note about the interview with the Cinema Guys. So when we recorded our episode last week, Justin of the Cinema Guys had to quarantine last minute. So we ended up recording our conversation over Zoom. And unfortunately, about halfway through the conversation, Justin's internet started acting up and he couldn't get back into the Zoom meeting for the last half of the episode or so. So when his voice suddenly disappears halfway through, don't worry, he didn't get abducted by aliens. We didn't just kick him out of the meeting to be spiteful. It was just a technological issue that we just wanted to give you guys a heads up about. And lastly, Girl Presses Play will be taking a break next week in order to do a little bit of catch up. We will be back with a new episode on October 13th. You can follow our social media pages on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for updates. We do have a very fun and Halloween-appropriate genre that we're talking about today. So today's episode is going to be interesting because the genre we're talking about, it's a genre, but it's also in some ways a lifestyle, shall you say. Today we are talking about cult films, specifically cult status films. For cinephiles everywhere, they hold this weird and wonderful space in our hearts, and their existence is kind of inexplicable, but their fan base is hardcore. If you're wondering what a cult classic film is, I have a great definition for you from Dartmouth University, from their film genres library. So their definition is a term denoting an eclectic group of films defined post hoc in terms of their consumption by dedicated and devoted groups of filmgoers who engage in repeat viewing, celebratory enthusiasm, and performative interactions. The birth of cult films started with the counterculture films of the 60s and 70s, which were very much made not necessarily as films to be watched, but experiences to be had and ideas to be explored. And a lot of them were critically panned and also did terribly at the box office. But then once home video came in and midnight movies started becoming a thing, they found these not only new audiences, but very, very devoted audiences. Probably one of the most common cult films that even non-movie people could probably name off the top of their head is the Rocky Horror Picture Show with their midnight screenings, which are especially common in New York City around this time of year during Halloween. A reporter for The Guardian named John Patterson, he wrote this really sweet and funny, I guess you would call it an op-ed, but he wrote an article for The Guardian about going to America for the first time and going to a Rocky Horror Picture Show screening for the first time in DC. It's a really fun read, and it also includes a lot of really interesting tidbits about cult films and midnight movies in the US. You should definitely check it out. I will hyperlink it below. I'm fairly new to this world. My first cult film, I'm trying to think, it was either Miami Connection just 2 years ago, or no, I lied. I watched Troll 2 when I was in college, with my roommates. I forget why we had stumbled upon this, but we decided it was a good idea to watch it. And not only was I shocked at just the fact that this movie was a thing that existed, but even just the fact that it has this huge audience and people make memes and make funny jokes about it. And as I started watching more of them, I started to find that I had more questions than I did answers about the world of cult films. But today, those questions shall be answered. We are going to be talking with the cinema guys to discuss what gives a film cult film status and what's simply just a weird film that everyone likes. So get cozy and get ready to get weird, because we're talking cult status films with the cinema guys today.
Future events such as these will affect you in the future.
Could you give us some of your political beliefs?
Kill everyone now!
Nice dress.
Thanks. I bought it at Versace.
You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness or duder or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Alrighty, so we are taking a look at some of the best and worst cult films and see what unites them with the help of some fellow film lovers. They were voted one of Cincinnati's top five local podcasts, and they've been written up in City Beat and Soapbox Cincinnati. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm welcome to Brad, Justin, and the Cinemaiden, aka the Cinema Guys. Hello.
Hello
from New York. Hello. How are you guys?
Hi. This is exciting.
Quarantined. Good. All separately.
Yes.
So fun.
Just like
we're alone
else.
Together.
Yeah, we're alone together.
Yeah, I mean, New York isn't much better. We've opened indoor eating, but I honestly don't think people are comfortable enough at that at this point to like go out to a very enclosed indoor space where you're like elbow to elbow with someone and their $20 plate of pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Most people aren't comfortable with that yet.
But were people ever comfortable with that?
I just don't even know the rules.
Yeah, what are the moves?
There are no rules.
Yeah.
There are no rules. Yeah. Just laugh or cry. Know. That's the choice you have. Just laugh or cry.
Laugh, cry, or cough.
And we could laugh or cry to a lot of these films. Hashtag awkward transition. So
that was a great transition. Speaking of laughing and crying.
Thank you very much. So I know I have my criteria. I'm very interested to hear what you guys think makes or doesn't make a cult film or cult status film. We should specify for the audience, not films about cults like The Wicker Man or Midsommar or something like that, like films with cult status. So one of my first criteria is they have to be made by directors who they either don't really know what they're doing or they just love what they're doing so much, they don't really care that they know what they're doing. So my example of that is like Miami Connection has a really weird backstory in that the guy who directed it, wrote and directed it, Richard Park, he only made it to advertise his soon to be opening Taekwondo school and has never made a movie in his entire life, which I think is hilarious because it actually turned out okay someone who had never picked up a camera. It could have been a lot worse. It could have been like full suburban sat squatch. How did he even think this was a good idea? But I don't know. There's something like slightly idiot savant about a cult film. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah. So I think you and Brad are probably really similar in that. So my introduction to cult film was a girl I dated in 1996. What were you, two? I think maybe.
Yeah, I was seven.
She took me to the Rocky Horror Picture Show that was going to be shown at this theater. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll go see a movie. That sounds great. I had no idea what I was walking into. So I walked into the outfits and the leather and the skin and the rice and all the stuff. And I remember being like, what is this? And at that moment, I realized there is a whole love of film that I don't have, that I didn't know that people had. So then that was what I thought was, okay, this must be cult film. And then after that, I don't think I got back into one until something like Big Lebowski or some of the bigger ones that I would say are cult films. So then I've always associated with, okay, they didn't do well in the box office, but they're also,
yeah,
they don't have to be bad films. But now I've seen, mm-hmm. like, knowing Brad, who's got me into all these other films, oh, you can, I think I was probably part of one last October when I was on Greg Sestero's film. Like, I didn't know. So now I know that you can make them.
What? On purpose. You were in a Greg Sestero film?
What? Oh, yeah, yeah. What? I'm the production artist, and then I'm also, like, a glorified extra in the back of, like, several scenes. But, yeah, I got to be on set for a couple days. It was cool.
My boyfriend's going to be so jealous.
He and Greg are BFFs.
Oh, yeah. My God. That's amazing.
He flew me and my wife. He was like, hey, I'm going to fly you up. And I was like, can my wife come? He's like, yep. And so he put us up in a hotel, and it was really odd 3 days. That was really cool and fun, but also very surreal and odd. So his movie should be coming out soon. I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it, though, but I mean, I never signed anything, but I don't know.
I think if you never signed anything, you're right. Fine.
I can do whatever I want, right?
And he talks about it all the time.
Yeah, he talks about it. So, mm-hmm. Anyways, but then, it's his attempt to make a good movie. After watching Best Friends, I went expecting something low, but it was probably a crew of 30 to 40. And it was really nice cameras, and we were shooting all day, and, like, it was very professional. It looks cool, so I don't know. We'll see. But anyways, I think I originally thought that films didn't have to be low budgeted to be a cult film. Just it bombed, but a lot of people happened to like it. But now I know you can make them, right? You mm-hmm. can make Sharknadoes. And I just, you know, I got my children and all their friends to watch VelociPastor like 2 days ago. So
that's so interesting, because that was actually one of my things where I'm like, it can't be a cult film if it's this. But I think about how there has to be, and maybe I'm not thinking that it has to be low budget, but more of there has to be a somewhat low budget quality to it. So like Rocky Horror and Troll 2 and Miami Connection, everything's very like handmade, and you can see how the crew kind of like scrapped their stuff together and made it work. But then I think of things like The Room and Showgirls and Point Break, and they had actually like pretty substantial budgets behind them. I tend to think of cult films as like the films that no one had faith in, but they got made anyway. Mm. And I equate it with like, oh, well, if you had a bunch of money, then people had faith in it.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to see what become, like, isn't it up to the mob to decide, yep, we're going to all like this, or no, we're all going to hate this. Like, we're never talking about this, right?
And more often than not, I think a lot of people associate cult films with a horror movie, you know, like an Evil Dead, where it's really low budget and it just became this huge thing. Mm-hmm. When my criteria, yes, low budget, but I'm with Justin, like it has to get a large following behind it in order to kind of to be the, you know, give it this cult status. It doesn't necessarily have to be low budget. It can be a big budget. Like for instance, you could feasibly say, like, the Fast and the Furious franchise, it was almost dead after the third movie. Like, it was almost gone. But because of the quote-unquote, you know, the fans and the cult status behind it, they were able to get a fourth one and a fifth one made, and now we're getting ready to go to
Couldn't you say that about Star Wars, though, Brad? Couldn't you say that about Star Wars?
No, because...
I mean, your theory, because your theory is saying, like, oh, it's for the fans. Like, most... The last three Star Wars films were definitely for the fans.
Right. They but were.
I don't think you can be cult movie and mainstream. I think the two
they don't go hand
divide.
In hand.
But Firefly would be a great example.
Fox I said earlier Fifth Element.
Resurrected it.
That's true. And that was a good movie. I remember seeing the movie before actually knowing what Firefly was, and I was really impressed.
Yeah.
And to be fair about the Fast and the Furious, I do think Tokyo Drift has somewhat of a cult following.
Yes, it absolutely
within
does.
Fast and Furious fandom. I was going to visit a friend in Japan And he said, I was like, oh, what are some movies I should watch, you know, to, you know, get a vibe of Japan? And he said, don't laugh at me. The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift actually has some really great shots of the city.
Oh my God.
Wow. But yeah, I found that of all the kind of early Fast and Furious movies, that one has the most devout following.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought for sure, this is a rabbit hole, but I thought for sure that in this last movie, when they're bringing everyone back, they would bring that like country guy from Tokyo Drift, like the main character. I was like, oh, he's got to come back, right? But man, yeah, they only bring
the guy that he competed against, or at least the last couple of ones I've seen or followed. He's like cool. They only bring, I forget what his name is, but like the bad slash good guy.
Yeah.
Oh, Han?
Sorry, actually, I cut you off.
Yes, thank you, Han. I was like, I know he has kind of like an American pop culture name. I can't remember because there was like the Soul O joke.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, like, Justin, you mentioned Velocipaster. I think like it's a, or even Sharknado. It's the thing now is you're trying to make a cult movie. Yeah. It's like they want this. Like, we're making a movie that's going to be a cult film. Which,
yeah, have you seen Velocipaster, Alana?
I have not seen Velocipaster.
Oh, it's so made to be bad. You're watching it going, oh, they wrote, which I think might be a skill to write script to be bad. I was like, man, whoever wrote this, I'm just interested in like, man, they wrote a really bad script on purpose.
Oh, they absolutely did.
It's even more purposeful than like, I think, than the first Sharknado. This one's like, I want to be horrible.
Is that good. What was that movie Rubber with the tire that regains consciousness?
That kills people? Yeah.
Yeah, that's like obviously made to be terrible.
Or I was even thinking of this because I watched recently The Man Who Killed Hitler and then Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And you think from the title, oh, it's going to be this wild romp and it's going to be so crazy and weird. And to give credit to the movie, it's actually very good and it's very thoughtful, and without giving too many spoilers, it's a very kind of, you know, looking back on your life and thinking about what you've lost in order to accomplish big things, and it's a very like quiet Sam Elliott drama in a lot of ways.
He has the best take on Man That Killed Hitler and Bigfoot ever.
And it was where I was sitting there, I was like, I thought this was gonna be like a funny, campy, because that was one I think my big thing is too, that like the mob can't try to make it a cult hit, if that makes sense, because I feel like from the title alone they were trying to go for that audience, they were trying to get people to say, oh, this is a future cult classic, but it's more of just like a pretty good melodrama.
Unlike the movies, you know, that sci-fi makes, where, you know, it's like big spider versus mega shark. You're like, I know what they're trying to do here.
Yeah.
But do you feel like those kind of movies that just try too hard, like they shouldn't be cult classics because they're just trying too hard? Like, I feel like the best cult classics are the ones that don't even try.
Right.
Like, I know one of the biggest ones is Boondock Saints. I would probably say that's one of the biggest cult movies I could think of. I don't like the movie. I'm not one of the fans, but
I like it.
It is one of those films that lower budget, kind of under the radar, but it has become like this big thing, and people judge you by like, what do you think of Boondock Saints? Well,
I feel like Boondock Saints is like the Kurt Vonnegut of cult films. Everyone's like, oh, you've never read Kurt Vonnegut. It's the same with, oh, you've never seen Boondock Saints. Yeah. You don't like it. Like, there's plenty of mainstream movies or movies that everyone agrees are wonderful and like, okay.
My issue with Boondock Saints was I worked at Hollywood Video when that hit the shelves. And I remember seeing it and it advertised on the little VHS tape, if you love Pulp Fiction, you'll love Boondock Saints. And I was like, well, I love Pulp Fiction, especially in like 1996.
That is a false statement. That is such a false statement.
Yes.
And
they did that with, have you ever seen the movie Existence?
Yes.
I'm embarrassed I haven't watched that because I've seen pretty much every other Cronenberg film. I've seen Naked Lunch and I haven't seen Existence.
Existence is amazing, but I rented that because it's around the same time it came out, and it said, if you love The Matrix, you'll love Existence. And I was like, well, I love The Matrix. And I have no idea why those two would be connected to any degree. But
there's no reason to connect those at all. You did mention, you know, Paul Verhoeven and Showgirls. I feel like he's a director that has made other bigger budget cult movies like Starship Troopers. You could not quite maybe put RoboCop on there, but it kind of became bigger after the fact.
Yeah, you know, well, I feel like released. Not maybe as much for Showgirls, but especially Starship Troopers was very much not understood until after the fact. Mm-hmm. I was watching the Half in the Bag episode about Starship Troopers, and they actually brought up a really good point that it's parodying a propaganda film, but it is made as a propaganda film with all the like high-key lighting and everyone's really beautiful and the cheesy plot line. Mm-hmm. But people just took it so as is in the 90s. People had no idea what to make of it. But then in 2020, when the world looks a lot like Starship Troopers in a lot of ways, or RoboCop or any Paul Verhoeven film, you're like, oh, I get it. This is an anti-militarization film.
I've taken my 16-year-old, hey, we have gone through, it's been a decade of a journey through film, but just, it was probably a month ago, we watched, I was like, hey, I'm gonna let you watch this movie, Starship Troopers. I was like, it's not good, but I really like it. I really like it, but I was like, I was like, but a lot of people know it, so you should watch it. And he was real interested. He was like, he followed, he jived. I realized Starship Troopers would be considered a cult classic, but I like it a lot.
And I'm not surprised because kids have so much access to content that they're so content savvy at this point.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little frightening, I'm not going to lie. I think a part of me feels like, oh, I went to like film school and I sought out all these films in the Criterion Collection, and now there's, you know, 18-year-olds on YouTube who are doing dissertations about cinematography. I'm like, I'm impressed with you, but damn it.
He just jumped into Coen Brothers films, so we started with Big Lebowski, and his big thing was, he was like, so this whole thing was about nothing. And I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. He's like, because there's no resolve to any of the characters. There's no growth to any of the characters. Nothing really happens. They're all exactly where they were when they started. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. And he's like, so why do people love it? I was like, I don't know. It's just good.
It's just good.
That's a very Coen Brothers thing. Now that I'm kind of running through all of the Coen Brothers films that I've seen in my head, I feel like No Country for Old Men is a little bit like that. What's the other one that I'm thinking of?
Put it in your pocket.
Oh my God. I'm blank because I've seen, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I feel like the characters are like generally, even though they went through a very kind of classic hero's journey. Hail Caesar.
He liked Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And he liked Big Lebowski, and there's another one we watched, but then he watched True Grit because he loves Western.
That's the one I'm thinking Western. Of that's like kind of an anomaly in a way.
Yeah, True Grit, he was like, oh, this one's not quirky, I like their quirky stuff.
Yeah, I mean, granted, that was a remake, so it technically wasn't their own material.
I was like, it's way better than John Wayne. I hate John Wayne.
I'm also realizing now that I'm looking at the list of like films that I really like in the cult stratosphere, I love the ones with very bright colors. And I think that might have been a rule that I went by that I didn't realize until now, is if it doesn't have like big bright colors and crazy high-key cinematography, it's not a cult film.
What is your list? What
are the ones? So my highlights list is Miami Connection. Are we going with ones that like already are cult status films, or ones that could definitely be cult status films? Because I have a couple. Because I have a couple I think are like future cult status films. So mine are
Let me hear your list of both.
Okay, so I would say my go-to cult status films, obviously Rocky Horror, and I feel like definitely go to midnight screening. Don't watch it by yourself. Because I know a couple of people who watched it by themselves. If it was like, oh, I have some free time, I'm going to try this movie that everyone talks about. And it's, the movie isn't really about that. It's about the experience of watching the movie.
Now, does that make sense? True.
I feel like the room is the same way, where don't watch it by yourself. Watch it.
Because I tried watching The Room by myself and I was kind of like, I don't really get it. But
is that true of the original, like when the person who made Rocky Horror Picture Film, did they shoot to make that sort of experience?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think they just wanted to make like I don't want to say like an erotic Grease or something like that, but if I'm correct, it was made around the same time that Grease came out. So they wanted to make like the cool kids Grease. I could be totally wrong about that, but I am remembering that Grease and Rocky Horror weren't so far apart.
We're calling it cool kids Grease for now on. I love it.
Yay! I came up with cool cult status terminology. I'm torn because I know, like I just said, it had a bigger budget and kind of a director with more acclaim, but I freaking love Showgirls. This is a family show. I'm not going to use the F-bomb, but if I was going to use an F-bomb, it's going to be for Showgirls. I would also say Troll 2. I'm very into like the classics, if that makes sense. I think a couple of the future ones on my list is The Void, which is a super gross, wonderful Lovecraftian body horror film.
I wasn't a big fan of that one. I don't know.
Oh, I liked it. Even if the movie doesn't really work as a story, I love when a movie is just like, go big or go home. Like, to spoil Midsommar a little bit, which is a film about a cult, not a cult status film. The ending was, I love that it was just like, go big or go home. Like, balls to the walls. This is what we're doing. Right. So I would even say, even if I didn't love the ending of a film like that, I appreciate that that's what they did.
And for me, it like, I would say, a future cult status movie for me. I know Justin and the Cinemaiden are going to shake their heads when I say the name of this film, but it's
Resident Evil 7.
No, The Color Out of Space.
Well, that was my next thing. It's like, isn't Nicolas Cage in and of himself now, if he makes one, it's a cult movie?
Oh, there's definitely going to be a Nicolas Cage film festival at some point in our lives. Which,
I mean, for instance, when Mandy kind of became like that big cult movie when it came out, because people were like, well, it's Nicolas Cage, but this movie is just insane, crazy. And now it's become like, I mean, it's Nicolas Cage, so it's just become even bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was the same director, right, that did Mandy and Color Out of Space, or am I hallucinating?
No.
Richard
Stanley did Color Out of Space.
Gotcha.
It was when we did like the live
showing of Color Out of Space, my Nicolas Cage catalog was back with Face Off and Con Air and Fast Times.
Oh, like, 90s that's how Nicolas Cage. Knew him.
And so all these people showed up for one. I was like, wow. And then they were doing, we did like a contest for the best Nicolas Cage impersonation. And they all started doing this Nicolas Cage that I was like, hold on, what is this? And then I watched Color Out of Space. It's like, we're doing this, and I don't know this Nicolas Cage. It's like
Mandy Nicolas Cage is not Moonstruck Nicolas Cage, which is kind of sad.
Yeah,
but all good things must come to an end. Every end has a beginning, etc., etc. Yeah, it's interesting, but I almost feel like that's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, oh, just because it has Nicolas Cage and it looks bonkers, like it's a cult film. I also feel like there needs to be a bit of aging, like cheese, with cult films.
I like that.
I agree. I think there are some people that call it like that instant cult movie, or they'll give it that title, which it may not necessarily meet that criteria. I know there's one coming out soon. It is Possessor from Cronenberg's Son, which will become that cult type of movie, because it's going to be so strange that it doesn't appeal to, you know, the mainstream, but it will become like that cult movie that have you seen this movie? You should watch this movie.
Well, I think there's also something I didn't think about, is the idea that a lot of these films now that are coming out, if they come out on VOD within the next year, I don't want to say like they can't be a cult film, but I feel like everyone's going to end up watching them because everyone is watching everything right now. And you can't really be like a cult film that came out in 2020 that no one watched, because everyone's literally watching everything because we have so much time in our hands, if that makes sense.
True. That's true. You guys didn't mention Toxic Avengers. I thought for sure that would be like a classic, right?
Well, actually, no, I've seen the musical.
Isn't that like the classic?
It is, but anything that comes out from Troma is one of those that's like Troma's in kind of a cult studio. I mean, that's what they put out. Yeah. They put out movies like that, is where it's like, oh, it's a Troma movie.
When that movie
you
came
know
out in the 90s,
get.
Was it like that then? Like,
let's look it up.
It came out late 80s, I believe. It was the first movie.
Late 80s sounds.
So back then, they weren't trying to make...
Yeah, The Toxic Avenger came out in 84.
Were they trying to do that then?
Back then, it was probably one of those that was like, oh, look at this crazy, weird movie. Whereas now, Troma's like, well, we know what their movies are going to be like.
That's true. Again, it's that kind of like Nicolas Cage style self-fulfilling prophecy of, oh, it's a Troma film. A college friend of mine was in the film Return to Nukem High. Just the title alone, Return to Nukem High. Like, they know what kind of film they're making. And I think that's maybe a big part of it too. Like, if the filmmaker knows what kind of film they're making or not. Because I don't think, like, the Troll 2 director, for example, stands by the fact that he thinks it's like a good movie and everyone should watch it.
Yeah, he does.
And it's not a full, you know, Tommy Wiseau situation, but he did not and does not realize the kind of film that he put his name on.
Well, Tommy Wiseau thought he made a good movie too, but he has since kind of changed and embraced that comedy aspect of it and just kind of let it become its what it is now.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to get known for. I mean, this is what I would consider, it started out as a cult hit and then it just became a big tentacled IP. But Stranger Things, I met this guy at Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, and I forget, he was at one of the indie comic distributors. We were just chatting and Stranger Things was brought up. And he said his girlfriend plays the girl that when, have we all seen the first season?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When Barb doesn't show
Stranger Things?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Have you heard of
What's
it?
This Netflix?
It's about this little girl who killed a bunch of Russians.
And she likes waffles.
And she likes waffles. That's basically it. A girl kills Russians and eats waffles. But yeah, his girlfriend played the girl that when the older sister asks if you've seen Barb and she's like, no, I haven't seen her all day. That girl has a whole Wikipedia page for her character. I think that's also a part of cult status films as well, is that there's got to be a real, like, almost scary amount of devotion to it.
That's interesting. I like that.
Brad looks like he disagrees.
No, I was trying to think, do you think some movies... background type character getting like this cult following behind them, like for me, Boba Fett is my favorite Star Wars character and he's in the films for maybe 5 minutes, but he has like a cult following behind that character, not necessarily that the movie is a cult movie itself.
And he's straight up wearing jeans and construction knee pads. Every time I see him, like, he's wearing jeans. He's just wearing jeans.
That's so interesting, because that's how you could also say that for Lando, who granted he had like a very big part in The Empire Strikes Back. His screen time isn't amazing, but now everyone's saying, oh, there's going to be a whole Lando series or there's going to be a whole Lando movie. Granted, part of that, I think, is also because Donald Glover
knocked that out of the park. So,
Oh, yeah. Childish Landino forever. But yeah.
So what about like, so Kevin Smith movies, right? Like they have their own world. Quentin Tarantino has his own world. And so does the Coen brothers. Like they're all like quirky, or Wes Anderson as well. Or what? Wes Anderson.
He has his own little
film nerd cult.
You were saying, I'm listening.
What was I saying? Oh yeah.
The parties.
I think that's very true in regards to, I don't know if it's even a certain director, but the world that they built has such a following. I've never heard of Wes Anderson films, but I've definitely heard of like Quentin Tarantino films or the Coen brothers or.
I think Wes Anderson does have a following. I know quite a few people that are like anything he puts out, anything like I watch all the Wes Anderson movies, like, and I'm like, I'm not a big fan. Sorry.
I feel like A24 is a fan of Wes
Anderson films.
We've had this discussion many a times before.
Remember that. I think 75% of them are really good.
Grand Budapest Hotel, I love, but.
Yeah, Grand Budapest Hotel. Grand Budapest Hotel was great, but I also feel like that was almost him kind of stepping out of his comfort zone in a little bit, because there was a lot of framing devices that he had to manage. So I feel like because of that, he had to concentrate maybe on the story more than he did on the aesthetic. I mean, obviously he concentrated on the aesthetic because there's a lot of motifs in there that really work, but no, I've seen a lot of the Wes Anderson films and that one is the story that I'm most involved in because it feels really well done and intricate.
Now, are there, you said you've listed a few cult movies that you...
I think I love all of them except for...
He's not letting this Wes Anderson horse die.
This is going to bleed over to our next episode.
We'll just call this episode, but Wes Anderson, though.
Oh, my goodness. It's okay.
We got this. We'll keep chugging along.
I'll let you...
What were you saying,
Brad? I was going to say we all have our own cult movies that we probably watch regularly, correct? Like,
oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, some that I've mentioned are like Evil Dead, or Peter Jackson's early films like Bad Taste and Meet the Feebles are kind of, they're a little more of the lower kind of cult type movie, but they do have a following behind them.
Another one I have on my list is, I actually talked about this in the Patreon episode for September, but it was, I just love it so much. I want to talk about it again. It's called Anna and the Apocalypse, and it is a zombie musical that takes place during Christmas. Mm. And not only is it like this great, fun, zany film, but I also think it definitely has that Rocky Horror style interactivity where people can sing along and people can bring giant candy canes. And I need to rewatch that, actually. I haven't watched it in a bit, but I could definitely see that. Like,
I could see it being that type of following to that movie. For me, it was one of those that I was excited to see it and I was all in, and it started out great, but then it just kind of fizzled for me personally. But I can see a following behind it.
Okay, so I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
So do you think like a film that you consider a cult classic, like you're saying Boondock Saints is a cult classic? I don't consider Boondock Saints a cult classic at all because too many people love that movie. Everyone loves that movie or knows that movie or has seen that movie. I feel like cult classics to me are lower known films that are good quality and not as well loved widely. Boondock Saints I consider to be widely loved. Princess Bride I consider to be widely loved.
I don't get why people consider The Princess Bride a cult film. It's on like every other AFI list. Millions of people have watched it.
So like where is that line? I feel like where is that line between you say it's a popular cult classic film, but everyone's seen it. It just didn't get a nominated for like an Academy or something like that. I consider cult classics to not have an Academy kind of nomination or any kind of award nomination, but also a third to a quarter of the views of a blockbuster film. Now,
I think that's
also
a really good point. Mm-hmm.
Now, also, would you consider something like Boondock Saints? Like it might have been a cult classic like 10 years ago, but now everyone loves it. Can you revoke the cult classic title?
That is a loaded question, and I love it. That is so interesting because that is something to be said about Rocky Horror as well. Is even if you haven't seen the movie,
everybody knows it and everybody loves it.
Yeah, everybody knows it. Everybody loves it. Everyone, I mean, there's a reason that, you know, years and years and decades later, they're still running, whatchamacallit, midnight screenings. I actually went to college with someone who her college job was performing as Frankenfurter at one of the like downtown East Village Rocky Horror midnight screenings throughout September and October.
Mm.
So there is something to be said about even just the fact that it's part of popular culture in some way. I was just thinking about that with the fact that Alamo Drafthouse, I don't know if they have their own distribution company, but they will like buy the basically screening rights to all these weird underground films, and they have Weird Wednesday and Terror Tuesday. Like, has the culture of cult film become too popularized for it to be cult?
Yeah.
That's getting meta.
Then what is cult film called? What is the low budget, barely seen film called if it's not going to be a cult classic? Because these cult classic films are just manufactured now. They're not actually organic cult classic films.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it's almost like, the keyword is try. Like if you try to be a cult film, no. I don't know why I said it like that, but no. but yeah, it's interesting because I don't know how you guys feel about A24 films in general. I really love them, and what I'm about to say is not in regards to like the quality of the films they're making, but I remember when I first started watching A24 films, it felt like this very underground, you know, rebel indie studio that was just gonna make whatever they want. And then Moonlight wins the Oscar. And true, there's some films that they make, like I would say Ari Aster's films. I can see him having a cult following down the line with a couple more films. But yeah, you could see how some of the other films that they fund or distribute, you're going, probably no one's going to see this, but we're going to give it a wide release anyway. Not for the quality, but just how unmarketable the film might be. But now you see them getting more into TV and having wider releases and bigger budgets. So are they now still the kind of underground production company that they started out as? Mm.
Also, along that same line, what makes a film not really marketable? Like Rocky Horror, I think would be like, as you said, like the bad cool kids Grease, like that kind of culture wasn't really marketable in the day. Today it is marketable. Almost anything now is marketable. So what do you consider something that's not a marketable film now? Because if you say that something is like someone that is a drag queen, if you say it's not marketable, well, you're going to have a lot of people on your ass and you're going to look like an asshole. Sorry for my language, Brad, bleep that out.
It's not me.
But like,
I'll bleep it out. Don't worry. It's a family show.
It's a family show
about cult films.
But like, those are the kinds of things, like you can't say that that's not going to be marketable, or you can't say that a film about a gay couple is not marketable and it's a cult classic. Like those kinds of things are marketable now because they are mainstream. So what makes a film not marketable now?
Yeah, I feel like these days it's not about what you market, it's about how you market it, because it's not a cult film. Although I feel like it actually could become a cult film in decades to come. But one of the last films I saw in a theater was Birds of Prey. And there were all these blog. First of all, it made like a couple $100 million in the box office. So it was successful in my eyes, but a lot of people were talking about, oh, well, it wasn't marketable enough because, you know, Harley Quinn wasn't in the title and this, this, and that. And I was like, well, it's not that the movie failed. It's that the movie wasn't marketed right. It's not that the movie wasn't
correctly
marketable.
Exactly. It just wasn't. It is marketable. You just did it
correctly.
Wrong. Yeah.
What about a movie that gains a cult following before it's even released? Like
that
go,
I'm not
go
okay
off,
with.
That doesn't even make sense. You're not
DC,
even seeing the movie.
The Snyder cut of Justice League. It has a cult following and we're not getting it for another year. We didn't even think we were ever going to get it. But because of this following, we are going to get it now.
See, I feel like that's, to me, when I think of the DC, like the Justice League Snyder cut, I just think immediately of a punchline. You know, film geeks will be like, well, that's about as likely as the Snyder cut of Justice League, or, you know, something along those lines, where to me, it took on a life of its own just as a film nerd punchline rather than an actual devout cult following. But that's a really interesting point. I mean, technically the film did come out. Justice League did come out.
It did. But it wasn't his version, and only like what they say is they say that only a quarter of what we saw was his. So that's where the following, I think, kind of steamrolled bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, I think from that vantage point, shall we say, I think a lot of it is about like the ideas or like the possibility of what the movie could be for you as an audience member. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what they have a devout following to, is that, oh my God, it's going to be better. We have a movie that we didn't like and it could be better.
True.
It's like the cult of film of people who talk about films that don't actually know about films. So when they talk about how terrible it was, they don't actually know that, you know, they were filming for 15 hours and their producer cut a couple $1,000s and they just had to make it work.
Yeah.
I've also been spending a lot of time on the internet.
Well, I mean, what else are you going to do?
That's true, especially right now. Well, I guess that's why I was interested in doing this episode too, is because I was thinking, what is counterculture now?
Yeah.
What is, and especially in regards to cult film, what is counterculture, especially when it's either like, it's in the ethos never to be discovered, or it's just like millions of people are watching it.
Yeah. It's like the mainstream is to be the counterculture.
Yeah, because everything is so discoverable at this point. It's not about whether you can find it or not. It's about like, well, how did you find it? Did you find it on VOD or did you go to like some
was I one of the first
theaters?
To find it?
Yeah. I knew this film before it was cool.
Yeah, exactly.
With Midsommar, for a while, people were trying to make it a cult status film when, in my opinion, like it made 50 million. The budget was about 8 million. They made 50 million at the box office. People are still talking about it on very mainstream platforms like BuzzFeed and Vox a year after the film came out. I would say it was one of the more popular women's costumes, like the kind of cult member long white gown and the flower crown.
Wait, that movie, the budget was only 9 million?
Yep. I know. Wow. I'm shocked as well.
I think I looked earlier today and Fifth Element was 90 million, right?
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to double check.
It was a fairly big budget sci-fi movie.
That's actually another cult status.
90
film.
Million. Exactly. Which I don't understand how it is cult status. People love it. It costs a lot of money.
Bright colors. If you want to be a cult status film, bright colors.
I mean, it's a beautiful movie and I love it. It's one of my favorite films of all time, but it's not a cult movie, in my opinion. It's not a cult movie.
I if I remember right, I feel it did fairly well at the box office. I could be wrong, but
yeah, 263.9 million.
I wouldn't put that in a cult status.
And that was in 1997.
Exactly. Like that's probably equivalent to like 500 million now.
I mean, the budget of 90 million in 97. Come on.
True. But with Midsommar, I think people are trying to put it on a cult status pedestal because of the type of movie it is. They don't feel like, oh, it doesn't appeal to everybody. So people who like it, it's got to be this type of movie, which... I mean,
that's actually
it still
a really good point. Because the other
thing
is,
a lot of money and
like they joked about it. I shouldn't say joked about it, but they like featured it as a big part of the opening ceremony for the Oscars with the May Queen gown and all the background dancers. It was like, how is this a cult film if they're talking about it in, with all due respect to the Academy, one of the most widely watched film
that's
events?
Exactly what makes it not a cult film.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an amazing film. It was one of my favorite films ever, but it's not like, super underground. You have to like go to Alamo Weird Wednesdays to watch it.
I mean, I would almost put his first movie, Hereditary, more in a cult status than his Midsommar, just because it wasn't as big of a film. Mm-hmm. And it was still widely talked about, but it's still that same thing. It doesn't appeal to everybody.
Yeah, I could almost see people saying, don't go see this film. Don't go see this film. It's so effed up. Like, it's so scary. Don't go see it. And A, people then not seeing it because someone told them it was way too scary. And B, going, ooh, well, if it was that scary, I have to watch it. Like, some of the legend kind of birthed from that.
Exactly.
What are some of... Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask what some of your future cult status films are for you, The Cinemaiden, and you, Brad.
Future cult?
Like movies maybe that you've seen recently that you were like, well, I could see this becoming a, like I said,
like they could do midnight screenings of it or something. Inquiring minds want to know.
I can't even remember what movie I saw yesterday.
Cinemaiden. I know I've seen a few horror movies, probably... horror movies to me I feel lend perfectly to become like a cult movie because people would be like, have you seen this? Like, for instance, another one that was at Horror Hound that when you were there was Candy Corn.
Oh, was that the one with Tony Todd?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and I love the movie. I think it's great. It's basically a homage to 80s horror movies of old. So and I know it doesn't appeal to a lot of people, but I can see it kind of gaining a following behind after a while.
Well, especially
because it
I
wasn't
like,
widely released.
I was gonna say, I also feel like Tony Todd has such a cult following from Candyman. Yeah. It's kind of like a lead-in audience.
Well, and it had PJ Souls, who was in Halloween, and then Courtney Gaines, who played Malachi Children of the Corn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he had some cult, you know, movie stars in this film too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I don't know how much, how much what the budget was for this. Oh, yeah, I think that this movie would qualify. Ingrid Goes West.
Oh, I love that movie.
I love that
movie. That's a great movie. It's also very flashy and it has all the bright colors that I love.
Yeah, but it only did $3.3 million in the box office.
Well, what's so interesting about that is that that was the distributor Neon, that was one of their films, I believe 2 years or at least a year or two before Parasite. And now Neon is Neon because of Parasite.
Parasite.
But yeah, I think that got like a really lit, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it got a very coast to coast release with maybe a couple theaters here in Austin and a couple in Portland or something. But yeah, that's a great movie. And that's very kind of like zany and weird in a sort of Heathers sort of way. That's one movie it reminded me a little bit of is Heathers.
Yeah. So future cult movies, I could see that being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's our episode. I think we've solved a lot of problems. I think we've asked a lot of really important questions. Cinemaiden, Brad, do you have anything you would like to add?
No.
Thanks for having us.
I mean, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us on. But no. Fun. Cult movies. I love cult movies. So
yeah, it was nice really not reviewing one movie. It was nice just talking about movies in general.
Well, I don't know about you guys. I had a lot of fun. I learned some things and maybe we made the world a better place. Okay, we probably didn't, but either way, I'm really, really glad that we had this discussion, and I want to thank the Cinema Guys for stopping by. Be sure to check out their next episode, premiering October 16th. You can follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Cinema Guys.
Well, that about does her. Wraps are all up. And it was a pretty good story, don't you think? Made me laugh to beat the band. Parts, anyway. I guess that's the way the whole darn human comedy keeps perpetuating itself. Down through the generations. Westward the wagons. Across the sands of time until we... Oh, look at me. I'm rambling again. Well, I hope you folks enjoyed yourselves. Catch you later on down the trail.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back every Tuesday for new episodes, and be sure to check us out on our Patreon page, where you can support the show and get some really cool exclusive stuff for doing it. A very special thanks to our Patreon supporters, John F., Variolo Fencing, LLC, and Helen Rafferty. For news on upcoming episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Girl Presses Play. The show is written, produced, and hosted by Alana Rafferty. Intro music is composed by Asha Iwanowitz, and our logo design is by Mark Sauve. Thanks again. See you next time. Girl Presses Play.